Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show with your morning show hosts, Julie Calamine, that's me, and my co-host, Phil Huff. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Julie.
How have you been?
Pretty good. It's getting cold.
Oh, it is getting cold.
Yeah.
What does that mean for you? What are you doing in the outdoors with this kind of weather?
First means I put on an extra sweater. And if I need to find the cats, they're in front of the propane heater.
Oh, and the little dogs are too, Phil.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm also hoping that the dusting of snow we have comes off because I haven't finished putting down the garden or getting all the leaves up. So
a bit of fall work still has to happen for you. Well, I'm pretty much done with that and finishing up my fall hikes and thinking about snow, which is good because we're going to be talking about that in just a moment. And our hosts, our guests are going to be folks that know more about snow and snow-related activities than I do. But let's first have a bit of weather and then we'll introduce our guests. Phil, it's going to be more cold and, yes, and more snowy or rainy weather for most of the week. So we're looking at just really every day a chance of snow or rain, highs in the low 40s, lows in the low 30s. So it's that fall November weather in Sandpoint.
I keep hearing wintry mix, but it sounds like a cocktail, so I don't get too concerned.
There you go. It could be either, and you'll want to dress warmly for that. However, I want to give everyone a bit of hope by letting them know that Friday night, it looks like it's clearing out, a low of 26, and then Saturday, sunny and a high of 39. So there will be one nice sunny day over the weekend. And with that, I'd like to introduce our guests. And we've got great guests this morning. First, I'll be introducing Dig Krismer. Dig is the marketing manager at Schweitzer Mountain. Good morning, Dig.
Good morning, Julie. How are you?
Great. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
And our second guest is Jeff Thompson, executive director of the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Julie.
Great to have you both here this morning.
It's great to have a couple of veteran snowhounds back on the show.
I like wintry mix.
Yes.
We just need some of it now.
Look, I can tell they're chomping at the bit. This is radio, so you can't see them, but
they're smiling.
They're waiting for snow. Bring it on.
That's
yes,
right.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Well, if we could have you begin by telling us a little bit about your, well, we're going to start with Dig this morning, and we're going to be talking about two topics, fun in the snow and then safety in the snow. And so we're going to be starting with Dig because she's our fun in the snow person.
Woo. All right.
That's
right.
I like it. Dig, why don't you tell us a bit about how you came to be at Schweitzer, how you came to be in the area, and then on to what's happening at Schweitzer.
Oh my gosh. Let's see. I sort of ricocheted around for a long time, and then by luck, chance, the grace of God, whatever you would like to attribute it, my blessing to, I got a job at Schweitzer in September of 2011 and brought my family sight unseen to this gorgeous part of the world. I kind of joke about it. I got off the plane in Spokane dreaming of moving to this ski resort with this amazing lake, and I got off the plane in Spokane and literally started crying because I was like, what have I done? Oh my God, where are we going? But by the time I got across the Long Bridge, it was just amazing, and then getting up to Schweitzer has just been phenomenal. It's exceeded every expectation.
But you, it sounds like, made that decision even before you had crossed the Long Bridge and seen the area. How did that come about? Tell us about that.
About getting here?
Yeah, how did you find Schweitzer?
At the time, I had worked in skiing for most of my working life. After I left college, I got scared of a real job and ended up in being a ski bum in Colorado for a couple of years. And then through that, kind of worked at different various and sundry resorts in Colorado and then outside of Jackson Hole at Grand Targhee in Wyoming, or Idaho, as we call it down there. And then through that, I got to be very good friends with the former director of tourism for the state of Idaho, a fantastic woman named Karen, who is just amazing. And she, again, through other situations in my life, I ended up living overseas for a long time. And while I was overseas, we were ready to move back to the United States. I wanted to get back to skiing, kind of throwing different options around. Of course, I had a tribe of children to bring with me and my husband at the time, and trying to figure out where to go. And Karen recommended Schweitzer. And I had heard of it. I wasn't really familiar with it, didn't quite know what I was getting into, but she sold me on the idea. And of course, through internet research and pictures and all that good stuff, visually, it's aesthetically pleasing. And by the got here. It was great.
Convinced you. And was your first position marketing manager?
No, actually, I was hired as the front desk manager for the Selkirk Lodge and the White Pine Lodges, on the hospitality lodging side of things at the resort. My background is in marketing and sales, but that was a great way to get into Schweitzer, to get to know our clients, our guests, our owners, and the other staff, which I think that was the best place to start, because I really got a great feel for who Schweitzer is about, the guests and the people. So that was great.
It helps to know it if you're going to market it.
Exactly.
For sure.
Exactly.
Well, Dig, what's happening at the mountain?
Oh, it's snowing up there. we've had some natural snowfall, and then with the temperatures are perfect for us to make snow. So our mountain operations crew has been out on the mountain, and the snow guns have been fired up, which is fantastic. Yesterday morning, got to work, and it's blue sky with these crystal flakes flying everywhere, and that's from the snowmaking equipment, which is awesome. I know some people have hesitation about man-made snow, but honestly, it really is a good thing. It enables us to, get on the mountain and start skiing earlier. And man-made snow is a little bit more durable, and it's not quite as fickle as natural snow. So as we have these early season temperature fluctuations and rain, snow events, man-made snow kind of holds up to that. It's a little bit tougher, thick-skinned, as you could say. And so it lasts a lot better, which means if we put that snow down, particularly on Midway and on musical chairs, those high-density, high-traffic areas, the snow is going to stay a lot longer.
A nice durable base.
Exactly.
It sounds like it might be less susceptible to avalanching.
Yeah.
Well, we could talk about that. Do you have 8 hours?
Yeah. Yes. We could get into the science of bonding structures, the crystalline form.
All I know is you turn it on and it makes snow. Yeah. Jeff might know more than I do.
We'll get there soon.
The main point here for listeners is you're making snow.
Yes, we are making snow. And which kind of leads into another question Julie had mentioned is, when are we projected to be open? We love being able to ski on the Friday of Thanksgiving, after Thanksgiving. So if our weather patterns cooperate, if the temperatures stay cold enough, and if we can make a good base, we would love to be open on the Friday after Thanksgiving, weather depending. And the big concern, too, is safety of our guests. Like, several years ago, we had a bad season. We had one ribbon of snow. And as much as it was nice to ski, it really... We want a good experience for everybody, and we want it to be safe for everybody as well. So keep up your snow dances, keep the temperatures cold, and we'll see what we can do in terms of a mix of man-made and natural.
So what does the winter look like? Are you able to tap into long-range NOAA forecasts and make some predictions?
Yes, definitely. I wish I could predict the weather personally. I think Jeff probably does too, because it would make us really, we'd make a lot of money.
I think Jeff might be our real weather geek here. So.
Yeah, I've been looking at it pretty closely recently, and I think this winter we're setting up, everybody hears the term El Nino. And La Nina, this is going to be an El Nino winter, which for us could mean a lot of different things. But this year, it's looking like it's going to be a little bit drier and a little bit warmer. But with that said, it also looks like we're going to get some potentially extreme events. NOAA saying that, be ready to storm chase this year because that's going to be your best bet and go to higher elevations. So it looks like even though we're going to be in a little bit of a drier stint, we might get a couple storms that come in and just hit us really hard. We don't know what that will be, whether it'll be rain or snow or wind, but a lot of times with El Nino, we get these crazy events. So,
well, in historical data that we were kind of looking through at work when a lot of the forecasts were coming out, El Nino for us is right around average. And so Schweitzer averages 300 inches of snow a year. So if we're right around average, give or take, a little bit, that's still enough snow to enjoy. So
correct.
I think I like La Nina better, but I'm not overly concerned, touch wood.
We'll get our snow, that's for sure. Yeah. It's just a matter of when it comes and how it comes. Yeah. And they were kind of calling for this later start to the season, but to me, that just means it's all going to come at once. So we'll better powder days.
Yeah, it'd be nice if those storms space themselves out.
Yeah, last year I was crying. My legs hurt so bad because it was like storm after storm after storm after storm, and there's no way to recover. So I'd be okay with storm rest.
It did build up last year, didn't it? It just kept coming.
Yeah, we had a great season last year.
It was.
Yeah, and that's one thing that Schweitzer has in its advantage is that it is so high. So the higher elevations and the more north we are, I think, is really going to help us.
Good to hear it. Yeah. Well, you know, the news last year and the excitement around what was happening at Schweitzer last year was a lot of it, well, snow, of course, but also around the new Sky
House. Yes. Which has been great. It's really fun. I just got back from my trade show travels and talking to a lot of people on the road who know Schweitzer, who've spent time at Schweitzer, their thoughts on Sky House and also their thoughts on the Outback and how that's the Sky House and the Outback, now how they complement each other in different ways and they offer these great experiences for people on the mountain. It was really fun to get that feedback. Sky House is just a gem. It's such a beautiful location. You guys at Ski Patrol actually now has a home where they can be warm and inside with plumbing and a coffee maker and a fake fireplace. Oh, I'm giving away too much. Sorry, Jeff. But they've got a new home that's great, and our guests have a really nice focal point to get to when they get to the summit of the mountain. And it definitely is an experience inside by the fireplace with coffee and nice scrumptious eats and so forth. But then that's also, in turn, created this great appeal. People are rediscovering the Outback in terms of sitting outside by the fire and hanging out down there watching the races when they're on zip down and on that side over there. So it's really fun to see that build. I'm really excited for this winter too, because our manager at the Outback, Bridget, has got some great plans for barbecue and brisket over the weekends, and she's an awesome cook.
Cool. I know. Good to hear.
Yeah, I know. So get ready. So yeah, so that'll be great. So it's good stuff. Good stuff.
Yes, it offers nice variety. Yes. And takes a little pressure off of
definitely
Outback.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So a win-win.
Yes, without a doubt.
Well, there are some plans in the works, aren't there,
Dig? Dun, dun. Yes, we just completed a big master plan for the resort, and the director team is pretty excited about all the different possibilities. The first thing, obviously, we put a press release out about a couple weeks ago. We will be replacing Snow Ghost next summer, which is a mixed blessing I've gotten. I know, Julie, you seem pretty excited. My legs are going to be sad to see it go, but I'm looking forward to the new lifts that we're going to put in. We will replace Snow Ghost with two lifts. One will be a detachable quad starting kind of just above Cedar Park, and the offload will be at the existing mid-station for Snow Ghost. And then the other lift will be a fixed grip triple, which will pick up kind of at the bottom of Will's Runout near Colburn Lake area, taking you back up to the summit of the mountain. I know a lot of people are kind of concerned in terms of layout, like what that's going to be like to ski and ride. Just a couple things to keep in mind as we talk to people. It's a very similar setup to what we have on the triple and Basin Express on the front side. And when we do have poor weather days, when the top of the mountain gets shut down by wind or, you know, icing or whatever has affected the lifts in the past, you still have access to terrain.
Or avalanche. Are you not allowed to say avalanche?
No. We do talk avalanche. But again, for that too, like having the two lift structure will mean that if there's issues in Lakeside that we can't access that because of snowfall, there's still the ability for our skiers and riders to get out and play in the terrain off of Have Fun and Snow Ghost. And I'm actually really excited about that. I think it's a very underutilized part of our mountain. There's some fun north facing little tree runs in there that we'll be able to glade out a bit, and I just am really looking forward to that part of it. I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
For Patrol, I don't know what you guys.
I just think it has so many more options. You know, I mean, like you said, you can isolate certain parts of it if we need to because of weather, or different people can enjoy different experiences, whether
right.
it's the groomers or the steeps or the powder or the corduroy.
Yeah, and making that full lap, I think, is still going to be okay. Because once you take looking at the timing of taking the two lifts to get back to the summit, it's comparable to what we have currently with Snow Ghost, except for hopefully we won't have lift maintenance issues or lines developing like we kind of had for Snow Ghost. So I think people right now looking at it, it's like, oh my gosh, I got to take two lifts to do a lap through Wayne's Woods. I think it's going to be as efficient, if not more so, than what they're currently experiencing. And hopefully they'll see that when the lifts are in next year. So.
And are they a little faster, the chairs?
A little bit. The overall travel time, I think, is about 2 minutes slower than the current lift. But again, that's not including lift waiting lines, because sometimes at Snow Ghost, we know it can be a bottleneck on powder days. And that, you know, was one of our biggest challenges, is that we'd have lines of people backed up onto Kinixu, and it can get interesting. So I'm really looking forward to a high speed quad, get people kind of moving through that area, give them an option at the at the midpoint offload if they want to go and do laps through the bowl or not. So
yeah, it seems like that overflow too from six can pour down into Stella.
Exactly.
So if we can eliminate that, that'll help with Stella as well. Yeah.
So you've mentioned the lifts, but you also talked about a master plan. This fits into something bigger.
It is much bigger. Yeah. So, you know, Schweitzer, there's a lot of potential at Schweitzer. And so this master plan has really talked a lot about what the future looks like and some of the exciting things on there. For example, in the next 5 years, there is discussion of possibly putting a lift that would access Little Blue, which would also change the way that we ski that whole side of you know, the back bowl, which is really exciting because that would add a whole nother element to that experience. So that's kind of the next 5 years. Further on down the road, you know, 10, 15 years, maybe even 20 years, we'd love to explore the possibility of having more of a dedicated day village. As you arrive at Schweitzer at the roundabout, you see the sign and it says Future Road, and it kind of, which is a dead end road currently. So that would actually be the access to this other day area that we've talked about, and would give us the opportunity to have day operations, more beginner terrain, more of a learning center with rentals and lessons and everything kind of in one area. A lot of people know that our parking is a challenging topic or a challenging issue at the mountain. And as the parking lots have been, you know, that's our... It's definitely something we are aware of and we need to make improvements upon. And so we're trying to figure out ways to do that. And by moving eventually 15 years down the road to have a dedicated day village, opening up other parking options and other solutions, just trying to think ahead and think, you know, out of the box a little bit about what we can do as a resort to keep the guest experience better.
And Dig, you mentioned something about the bus this year.
Yes, we are really thrilled. The Spot Bus, Selkirk Pend'Oreille Transit, and Schweitzer have partnered together that we will be offering free shuttle rides from the Red Barn to the village, which means that if you get on the Spot Bus anywhere in Sandpoint, Pend'Oreille, and get to the Red Barn, you'll transfer to the bus to the village, but there's no charge. Last year it was $3 for anybody. It was free for our season pass holders. Now there's no charge for anybody, which I think is fantastic. I know a lot of people who don't ski or ride who might just want to be interested to come up and see what's going on at Schweitzer. You can do that. Jump on the bus at the Red Barn and it's free. Which is awesome. So
you mentioned moving. You're talking about moving the parking lot, or are you talking about moving more operations elsewhere on the mountain?
So it would be more of moving, well, kind of both, trying to figure out our parking situation and how to make that better, how to make that flow better, and also moving or establishing more of a second home so that we would still have rentals and so forth up in the village area, more for destination guests, and then having this day area that would be dedicated to a lesson rental kind of combination. Again, the end goal is to simplify the experience and make it easier. Trying to schlep across the parking lot with three kids, skis, gloves, hats, goggles, snack, it just gets to be crazy for people, and we want to make that easier. So that's our end goal.
Yes, I can understand that.
Yeah. So. It sounds like potential for more restaurants and beverage outlets.
Well, who doesn't like to eat?
Yeah. Those are the plans we all want to hear about.
Well, skiing makes one hungry.
Yeah, of course. Yes. Cold weather makes everyone hungry. That's so, yeah, right. It's all good.
So tell us about some of the upcoming events through the season.
Well, we've got the calendar is full, as always. We've got a couple of our standard events. We'll have the fireworks over Martin Luther King weekend and over President's Weekend as well. Deschutes Brewery will be back with their Red Chair weekend over, I believe it's MLK weekend. Or is that President's? Oh, gosh. I can't remember. Sorry, can't remember. Check the calendar. It's on there, Schweitzer.com. But Red Chair Weekend, which is a lot of fun. And then in March, we have the Mega Demo Day. We'll be back again for the third year. And that is an event for PAFE. All the proceeds of Mega Demo Day go to PAFE, and we're really excited about that. Closer to us in December, of course, is Community Day, which is scheduled for December 14th. And again, it's $10 lift tickets. All proceeds go to Bonner Partners of Care and Community Cancer Services. We would love to see the mountain just unbelievably choked full of people on that day because all of the money goes to those two organizations. So, and you can buy your tickets. The link for that will be online pretty soon, and you can support either organization.
Are there specials on rentals as well?
During that day, no, unfortunately not. The lift, it's just specifically for the lift tickets.
So what is a Red Chair Day? Tell us.
Well,
that's
Deschutes has their Red Chair beer. Oh, okay. And so they like to celebrate that with the ski areas, and they really like us. and we really like them.
I saw the opportunity for a great big painting party.
I know, wouldn't that be fun? Yeah, yeah. We'll paint all the chairs as snow goes red. Oh gosh, yeah, that would be interesting. But
so a fun day.
Yeah,
we were talking about. We were starting to talk about the great things that Schweitzer does to help the community, and of course, we just talked about the day in December. But we have other. Schweitzer does other things too. They have a kids' elementary program.
Yes, yes. Well, this is through Ski Idaho, which is a fantastic program. So Ski Idaho offers the Ski Passport, which is good for 5th and 6th graders, so the 5th and 6th grade passport. And how it works is it's $18 per child, and if you're in the 5th grade, then you can ski 3 free days at all 18 of the ski resorts in the state of Idaho, which is amazing. Idaho has 18 ski resorts. Such an underrated state for skiing.
Three at each.
Wow. And if you're in the 6th grade, you get 2 days.
So you might have to repeat
at 17 of those roads. Yeah, exactly. Well, you 6th graders get 2 days, so it works out. Well, but something to bear in mind is that if you're in the 5th grade here or the 6th grade here in Sandpoint or Segal, you know, or wherever you're in school in the region, you can take advantage of that and get 3 free days at Schweitzer, and which, you know, it's just a great way to get kids introduced to the sport and have a lot of fun. And we really recommend checking that out. The Ski Idaho website, if you Google Ski Idaho, it'll take you to Ski Idaho, and they'll have all the explanations of the program and how you sign up and register, and you can use that program.
And does that include rentals day?
It does not. It does not. So it is just access to the mountain. For rental programs, you know, I know gear can be expensive. We just had the SARS Ski Swap, which is a great way to get a hold of gear. We live in a community where a lot of people have kids and a lot of people have a lot of gear in their garages. So don't hesitate to ask your friends and neighbors if you've got stuff laying around, Craigslist, Facebook yard sale, see what you can find from other friends and around town, because I know I myself had gear that I'd love to just kind of get out and get out of my garage. The other thing too is I know the Alpine Shop has a great season rental. That's what I've done for my kids the last couple of years, because their feet grow so fast or their ability changes halfway through the season, and you want to be able to get them a different set of skis. Schweitzer has some long-term rentals as well. If they're not going to do the full season of skiing, the rental process at Schweitzer is pretty straightforward and super easy. Kirk and his crew in the rental shop are amazing. They get you in, get your boots, get your skis, and get you out on the mountain. Sometimes those are packaged in with some beginner lesson programs as well. So if you've never skied or your kids have never skied, don't be afraid. Winter is long where we live, so get outside and find ways to enjoy it. And taking a lesson is a great way to do that. So
that's good advice year round.
Yeah, it is good advice year round.
You know, Phil, 18 ski areas, 3 times for 5th graders. I think if a kid went to all of those areas, they might be repeating fifth grade.
That's what I mean. You'd miss so many, classes, you'd have to repeat it again. But then you get those 3 days again, you'd never get out of fifth grade.
You know, it's so fun. The Ski Idaho program is so great. When you think about Idaho in general, in this state, is just it's a wonderful place to go skiing. It's very unassuming. It's unpretentious. Everybody is super nice at all of the resorts. You're not going to wait in line in places, even on busy weekends, even at Schweitzer, you know, your 10-minute lift line or your backup at Snow Ghost. It's okay. It's manageable compared to other states, you know, bigger states, Colorado, Utah. There's a lot more people, a lot more different issues that come up, you know, when in your skiing trip. So Idaho, really, if you're looking to explore, you've got plenty of places to do it in state.
You sure do. And you see a lot of everyday people up at Schweitzer. Mm-hmm. Dig, have we missed anything?
No, just that we're really excited. Can you tell? I'm so excited.
All right.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, this bundle of exuberance is, once again, Dig Krismar. We're talking snow this morning with Dig, marketing manager from Schweitzer. And snow safety we'll be turning to momentarily with Jeff Thompson, executive director of the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. This is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho.
And we're going to take a quick song break with a perennial favorite. Merry Christmas. It's a little early.
Merry Christmas. You know, some of our listeners take exception to the idea that it's only grandmothers getting run over by reindeers.
It really can be anyone.
Can
we need to be careful.
Grandpa. Or grandkids. So we're back. We're talking with Dig Krismar from Schweitzer Mountain, Jeff Thompson from the Panhandle Avalanche Center, and we're going to shift a little bit to safety, which before we get into the avalanche safety, safety is a big topic on the mountain. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's, you know, snow... It's so much fun, and we have such a great time when we're out playing on the mountain, but we really do need to remember that, you know, things happen. And so using your brain, like our ski patrol talks about, that's the most important tool you'll take with you anywhere is your brain. So using that and thinking through your situations, you know, last year with our big snowfall year, there's a lot of really amazing days inbounds. And even on those big days inbounds, you need to be cognizant of what can happen. So like we were just talking about, making sure you're skiing with a buddy, keeping eyes on each other, having a plan where you're going to meet after a run if you're going slightly different directions, having ski patrol's phone number in your phone so that if something comes up, you have easy access, and just keeping an eye on each other while you're out there. You know, usually you can hear everybody, powder hounds, you know, whooping and hollering through the snow, but, you know, on big days, just be, even on not big days, general, be aware of each other out there.
That's totally right. You know, I think from ski patrol, one of our biggest messages is, please don't duck our ropes. You know, that's one of the hardest things for us. I mean, we understand on these powder days, everybody has that stoke and they really want to get the powder just like we do. But we had a couple incidents last year where folks, you know, went out of bounds and came back into closed areas. And we actually had to stop throwing explosives and controlling the snow because people were trickling into where we were working, which makes it hard for us to do our job and it makes it unsafe for us. So if there's one thing that we could get across from ski patrol is, please don't duck our ropes.
All right. Well, Jeff Thompson, as we've mentioned earlier, you are executive director of the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, but you're ski patrol too.
Correct.
So you're out at Schweitzer and you're also forecasting avalanche.
Yes. And they kind of overlap quite a bit, you know, because ski patrol, one of our primary focuses is making Schweitzer safe for avalanche conditions.
And when we're talking about avalanches, the concern is both inbounds and out of bounds.
Correct.
So tell us about that and the differences, too.
Well, that's a good question. Well, inbounds, we have a lot more tools to use that we can control the snow, and that's our goal. Inbounds is to really make it as safe as we can. So we use explosives. We use ski cut techniques. We actually use you guys. We use the public to help beat our snow down and make it safe. I mean, you can imagine the more people that ski over the snow, the more compact it gets, and generally the safer it becomes. But in the backcountry, we don't have that option. I mean, there's so many millions of acres out there that really our message is messaging. You know, we want people to understand how dangerous it is at a particular time and to give them the tools to answer the questions.
And are there a lot of people out there at any given time? Just tons of people in the backcountry?
There really are. I mean, you go out to Trestle Creek on a Saturday morning and you'll see 60, 70 trucks and trailers with sleds and snow bikes heading up into the hills. And then at Schweitzer, off the backside, we're just seeing an increased number of people that are leaving the ski area in search of that backcountry experience.
So let's start with the genesis of the Panhandle Avalanche Center. Tell us how it began, what the mission is.
Well, it all started very grassroots. You know, I think 1990-ish is from what I've gathered. There was a forecaster in Coeur d'Alene who started off with a voicemail message, basically. Collected some information and put a voicemail message out there and said, hey, be careful. And it has grown to what we are today. And so today we forecast twice a week, which means that we go out into the backcountry and we analyze the snow and how much of a potential there is for it to avalanche. And we relay that information through our website and through Facebook to our users. And we do that through videos and through an actual forecast. And then we also are focused on the education component. We want to teach people to make these observations for themselves.
And so tell us about the general area that you're forecasting and you're providing information and checking information on.
We have three forecast zones. So one of them is based here in Sandpoint, which is for the Selkirks and the Cabinets. And then we have one out of Coeur d'Alene, which is for the Silver Valley all the way up to Lookout Pass. And then last year, we added a forecast center out of Troy. So Troy and Libby and the surrounding Cabinet Rocky Mountains. Western Montana and the Panhandle is basically our forecast region.
So that involves a couple of different forests, that the Panhandle Forest as well as the Kootenai Forest.
It does. Our boundaries don't coincide with state or federal boundaries. It really is, where's the snow and where's it going to avalanche? And if you get on our website, you can see those boundaries.
That must require an expanding staff. You're everywhere.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Good job, Jeff.
We're trying. We have three forecasters here in Sandpoint, and then we have a forecaster out of Coeur d'Alene and one out of Libby. And we all work together and get it done.
And so how many people do you have going out into the field and testing?
Each week we have six. So we always work in teams of two, and we have two that go out in each zone.
Is the Avalanche Center a nonprofit?
It is. So we are 50% a federal organization. We're a U.S. Forest Service Avalanche Center. But most of our funding is coming through a nonprofit, the Friends of the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center. Mm-hmm. And so really, for us to keep up with the growth of recreation around here, we really need the support of nonprofit. And so a lot of our education and a lot of our fundraising comes through the nonprofit.
So I'm sure the forecasting is a blend of art and science. You're going out into the field, you're taking tests, you're looking at weather data. What else are you doing? How do you come up with the forecasts?
Well, we take weather. That's the first one. What kind of weather are we seeing outside right now? What kind of weather is showing up? And then we also take the current state of the snowpack. Where are our weak layers and how are they going to change with this weather? So it's really taking the snowpack and the weather and combining them to what's currently going on and what do we think is going to happen. And of course, there's a lot of details to that, but that's really what we're trying to get after.
You can't get down to saying this slope's going to fail on this date and there's going to be an avalanche in X valley, but you can make some general predictiveness about how risky it is.
Absolutely. And that's where it's hard because Mother Nature can be hard to predict. And, you know, I think last year at Schweitzer was the perfect example. Mm. You know, I think most people know about our big avalanche that we had in Lakeside where it fractured 12 feet deep. And it happened at a time where we had gotten 60 inches of snow in a short period, 3 or 4 days. And so Ski Patrol and Avalanche Center, we were really concerned about that new snow and that new snow sliding. But just as we were concerned about that, we threw a charge and it ripped out 12 feet deep.
And to that point, that's one of the amazing things about Schweitzer Ski Patrol and the work that they do, keeping an eye on that snowpack, being aware of what was going on. And so that was a controlled avalanche. You know, it was before the mountain was open. And luckily, it happened exactly as it was supposed to happen, in that it was a controlled avalanche. No one was, you know, the public was safe and there was no issue. There was a lot we learned from that. And it was pretty spectacular to see that event, you know, and I, again, just grateful to our Ski Patrol and to Jeff and his crew for really, you know, keeping us all safe on the mountain. That's without them, it just becomes a whole nother ball game.
Yeah, Dig's correct. I mean, it was a closed bowl early in the morning and it did exactly what it was supposed to do. And our people were exactly where they were supposed to be and everything went exactly right. But for us that are snow geeks, it was pretty eye opening to look at what happened and analyze it, and it was pretty neat. It was pretty fun.
You didn't get any video of it, did you?
We did. Actually, the Ski Patrol may have some video that they posted. I know there's some still photography that the resort was able to get. It was pretty interesting, the photos after the fact of like Angie from Patrol is, you know, standing under the 12-foot crown, and those of us that know that area and know that run, just to see that, it really, it's sobering. Actually, it really put it all in perspective. And then seeing the trees down by the lake, down by Colburn, and just kind of getting an up-close look at a debris field, I think for someone like me who's not an avid backcountry skier in the slightest, you know, but to be that close to a debris field and really see the power of that slide was impressive.
Must have been amazing.
Yeah.
I'm curious about a bit more about your forecasting. Is there a software program that you use that helps you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of models that we'll use, weather models, mostly, you know, U.S. and Canadian and European models that all weather agencies out there use to predict, and they all kind of come up with their own forecast. So that's exactly what we do at the Avalanche Center. We look at what everybody's saying and what all the models are saying, and then we take some local knowledge and we sprinkle that on there and come up with our own forecast, you know. So we take into consideration also what Canada's doing since they're so close and they've got great modeling.
But a computer doesn't just spit out a forecast. You don't just put in data. You guys have to basically figure it out a bit.
Correct. I sit there at 4 a.m. with 5 computer screens open and a cup of coffee and scratch my head and look out the window some.
So you come up with this forecast. Yep. Tell us how you put it out there to the world. How does everyone find out about it?
Well, every Tuesday and Friday is when you're going to find our forecast, and it comes out at 7 a.m. And the idea is that we're kind of catching that midweek group with the Tuesday forecast and the Friday forecast is catching that weekend crowd. And that's kind of how we think about it when we're putting the forecast out. And so the forecast is for a 24-hour period So it expires after that. And our goal is to forecast every single day, to forecast 7 days a week. But we're not quite there yet. Yeah. We're heading that direction.
And people are able to receive it if they sign up for an email? Or
yeah, if you go on our website, you can sign up for the email. Or you can just go to our website, idahopanhandleavalanche.org. And you'll see right there, it goes right to our forecast. We start forecasting December 2nd, I believe, is our first forecast this year. And we'll continue all the way through the end of April.
Really helpful. So you're compiling data and making educated guesses about snow and avalanche. And do you save it, and does it help you in the future? Is there a research element to the work that you do?
Absolutely. There really is. I mean, we go at the end of the season and go back and look at how many times we issued advisories or warnings. And we also look at what a certain layer did throughout the season, whether it became, you know, more tender or whether it became more stable. We're always going back and looking, you know, just like that avalanche at Schweitzer last year. We learned a ton from that, and we'll use that data for the next 30 years, you know. So we're always looking back at what happened, what we thought was going to happen, and then basing our future decisions on that. I should also mention Facebook. You know, I've been doing this for a while, and I'm kind of used to printing out the forecast and sitting in a chair and drinking coffee. But these days, people really want the information quick, and they want it, you know, it seems like videos are really our number one subscriber. So we try to put a video out every week too. So you're driving to the trailhead, you can watch a 2-minute video of us looking at the snowpack, and we'll tell you what's going on. And you know, that's a good way to get info as well.
Sure. And on the way is a good time to do it, because I've found sometimes when I'm skiing and I just ski at Schweitzer, I can't get my phone doesn't have connectivity, so one has to think about that.
Something else too, just to kind of with that whole, you know, using the information, like if you are planning to go out in the backcountry, take the information that the IPAC is providing, but also make sure you have your gear, your probe, your beacon, your shovel. Schweitzer on Sundays has Transceiver Sundays, which is with our ski patrol crew, who's going to help you learn how to use that equipment. Just because you have it doesn't mean that you know what to do with it in an emergency situation. So take advantage of those Transceiver Sundays, learn how to use the equipment, learn how to practice digging, probing. You know, and I know IPAC does some of those days too. You have your avalanche awareness courses, and it's get informed.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because the center does do other educational opportunities for individuals, so they are safe when they go out. Tell us about that.
Correct. We do. And that's a big part of our mission, is making sure that people are in the position to make good decisions. And so education is huge. And we do everything from teaching preschool classes to teaching full-blown level 2 48-hour classes and everything in between. So if you have a group that is interested in learning more about avalanches, please get in touch with me through that website. You can find my contact information, idahopanhandleavalanche.org. This year, which is going to be kind of exciting, is it's the second year for our Snow Pit Chats. Mm-hmm. You know, last year we started a series called Snow Pit Chats, and the whole idea is to keep it fun and keep it fresh and talk about avalanche concerns that are practical and that you can take with you, whether it's the backcountry behind Schweitzer or current snow conditions, or, you know, we kind of come up with the game plan about a week before, because we really want it to be something that everybody can learn from. And so those are going to be downtown. It looks like probably between the Alpine Shop and McDuff's Beer Hall. And you can find the dates on our website, but we're going to do 4 this year. And I've got some great guest speakers lined up this year. So hopefully we'll see you there. Free beer, free pizza, and free education.
Okay.
Yeah.
So come for the beer and pizza, stay for the avalanche safety.
Yeah, exactly.
So you mentioned the Snow Pit Chats and the organizational classes, but there's also classes for individuals. Someone doesn't belong to an organization, it's just moved here, but wants to start getting into the backcountry.
Yeah. So we have a series of avalanche awareness classes, and we do those all over the place. And those are all free, and those are all on our website as well. And those are generally a 1 to 2 hour, just like Dig was saying, take this gear into the backcountry with you and stay away from these sorts of slopes. I mean, it really is a quick bang for your buck. Here's what you need to know. And then that next level, kind of the first level of professional backcountry recreation is a level 1 class, an American Avalanche Association level 1 class. And we're teaching 4 of those this year as well. And those are 24-hour classes over 3 or 4 days, a little bit more intensive. But if somebody's really getting into this, it's kind of that first step.
And pretty important if you're in the backcountry. Imagine there's a fee for that class.
There is. Our level 1 classes are are $350, which is actually cheaper than most for a 24-hour class. And then our level twos are $450, and that's a 40-hour course.
Mm-hmm. Sure, but an important course. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the courses, the free courses that folks can attend. Do you need support with those? I'm wondering what sort of support this nonprofit might need. Volunteers? It sounds like funding is a big one.
Yes. All the above.
Yes.
Yeah. When I'm not looking at computer screens and coming up with forecasts, I'm banging on doors trying to get sweatshirts so I can hand them away in raffles. So yeah, we're always looking for support. You know, funding is a big one for all nonprofits, including us. Mm-hmm. And we do try to generate some funding at our events, whether it's a mm-hmm. raffle or donations. But really, the information is what's most important to us.
Well, I think we're running a little low on time, but we always like to, you know, end with a couple anecdotes or to make sure we didn't miss anything.
Well, I'm going to bring it up. Today, Jeff told me this morning, is Annie, the Avalanche dog's birthday.
Oh,
and I got to tell you, so Jeff is part of his role at Schweitzer and also with IPAC, is he's in charge of our Avalanche dog program at Schweitzer. We have three dogs now on the mountain, Annie, Abby, and Murphy, who are amazing. And they are the best ambassadors to getting Avalanche information, because not only do you get to go talk to the dog and get some quality puppy time, but you get to talk to the patroller, the handler, understand the role and the function of the Avalanche dogs and why they're there on the mountain. It's a fascinating working dog situation that we have at Schweitzer. And I'm just really proud of the program. I'm really proud of what Jeff's done with that. And the dogs are great. So if you see them out on the mountain, I know Steve and Lee will be really glad, as I say, stop them, talk to them, to know what's going on. Yeah.
That's all part of it. You know, the Avalanche dogs, that's a big part of what they do is you know, make people aware that this can happen. And right. That's why these dogs are here.
And so, real briefly, what do the dogs do?
The dogs' primary function is to find people that are buried in avalanches. So if you're not wearing an avalanche beacon where your partner can find you, there's not many options to find somebody quickly, but mm-hmm. a dog is the best one. And so we have three dogs here at Schweitzer that are trained for that mission, and mm-hmm. we've put them to work already in the small time that we've had the program.
Mm-hmm. Pretty essential as part of an avalanche safety program. Dogs are a big deal.
It is. They have a role. I mean, they really do. Most big ski patrols in the West have avalanche rescue dogs.
Well, you talked about last year in the article, the dog can scan a certain amount of terrain faster than the probe line can.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so that it's, you know, it's amazing what the dog is able to accomplish in such a short amount of time.
The nose is so sensitive.
Yeah,
that's right.
So ski safety has come a long way from the St. Bernard with the keg around its
Still my favorite, but yes, yes, okay. Definitely, yes, yes.
Well, as we wrap up our morning show, would either of you be able to tell Phil and me what excites you about getting to work every day? What's the best thing?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, for me right now is looking at the weather, hoping that it's going to snow. For some reason this year, I really have a stoke to go skiing and snowmobiling and be out there and do it. So I kind of feel like I'm chomping at the bit for that. I got my skis sitting there polished up, ready to roll.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Schweitzer's just great. Everybody who works up there is such a neat human being, and everybody's got a great story, and there's how they ended up at Schweitzer, or why they're there, or why they love skiing or snowboarding, and it's just this really the passion for the sport, and I don't know how to explain it. Like, we joke about the Schweitzer difference and the Schweitzer life and all this kind of stuff, but I love going to work there because it really is a big goofy family that just, we can't get enough of the sport. We can't get enough of being around each other. We love being on the mountain. We love playing. And it is contagious. I just, you know, I can't imagine working anywhere else, honestly.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, Schweitzer is a pretty amazing place that way. You know, it'd be pretty easy for me to spend all my time at the Avalanche Center, but I got to go up to Schweitzer. It's just too much fun up there. It's great.
Yeah.
There you go.
Totally agree.
Well, I'd like to thank you both, Dig Krismer, Marketing Manager of Schweitzer, and Jeff Thompson, Executive Director and Ski Patrol, Executive Director of Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, and Schweitzer Ski Patroller, and Avalanche Dog Owner. Thank you for joining us.
And most important, Annie's human companion.
Yeah. And on that note, we'll take a short song break with Frank Zappa's Don't Eat the Yellow Snow.